Coyle works the puck back out for McAvoy. Down low, Marchand out in front, DeBrus scores!
.702 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Even though it's a Monday, and Mondays are no good. I'm like Garfield. I hate Mondays. I do like lasagna. Mondays are great. This Monday is great because there's four more playoff games on tonight. I love a playoff quadruple header. Yesterday was awesome. What a great Sunday. Tonight's going to be good as well. You got Leafs Bruins to kick it off. Isles Canes. Then Stars, Golden Knights, finally Edmonton and LA get their series underway. It's 7 o'clock our time. You are listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. James Myrtle from The Athletic is going to join us in just a moment here to kick off hour two. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio, Kintec Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec, that's what you're waiting for. Let's go to the phone lines now. He is the senior managing editor of the Athletics NHL coverage. Good friend of the program, our dear buddy, James Myrtle joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Myrtle? How are you?
I'm good, guys. Long time no talk.
Yeah, how you been? Did you stay up late last night to watch the Canucks game?
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, I feel like I'm like the kid who went to the fair and ate too much cotton candy or something, because I watched like four games yesterday back to back to back. And
you were eating hot cotton candy?
Yeah, also the cotton candy. Yeah.
No, I'm too old for that, but I have regrets today for how much slothfulness I had yesterday just watching TV all day.
Well, before we get to the rest of the NHL picture, thoughts on the Canucks-Preds game one, 4-2 win for the Canucks over Nashville?
Good win for Vancouver. I mean, I thought when Nashville got the first goal that maybe they were going to have one of those, you know, hold on and score one goal, get an empty netter, and just sneak out with a road win. But Vancouver persevered and kept pushing, and I think that's going to be a long series. I think too many, I don't know what the mood has been like in Vancouver, but I think too many people have been writing Nashville off completely. I saw a lot of people picking Vancouver in five or six games because of the season that the Canucks have had, but Nashville's been one of the best teams in the league over the last, you know, 2-3 months, and they don't have a lot of firepower, but they've got great goaltending. They've got Roman Josi. They've got, you know, Ryan O'Reilly's had a great year. Philip Forsberg's had a great year, you know, and they're good defensively and they're well coached. So I don't think that's going to be an easy out at all.
Yeah, I had the Canucks in 7 in this one. I was kind of the same mind where it's like they're not an easy out. And you look at them on paper and maybe it's not the most overwhelming collection of talent. But I think last night was a pretty good example of what we're going to see moving forward. Like, I mean, you got to understand the Canucks were either tied or trailed for the majority of that game.
Yeah, the Canucks only had 14 shots through two periods.
Now, the converse part of it is they didn't give up much either. It was a very low event game. And I think Nashville was like more, especially on the road, probably more than happy playing that. But I think like they like to
open it up a little bit though.
Right. Well,
I understand what you're saying.
I'm sure they would have liked to have had more opportunities on net.
Yeah,
but at the end of the, like, if you're Nashville coming out of that game, you're probably not terribly upset. Because really, the game came apart in a 12-minute span in the third period, and then you lost. But overall, I think you got a pretty good read on it. Like, I think Nashville will keep you tight. I think the Canucks are a better team, but I think it's going to be tighter than most expect.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you look at the forward group for Nashville, and it's like, you know, I watch a lot of hockey, and it's like, who are some of these guys?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's you know, they got a great first line, but then after that, it's pretty meat and potatoes. So, you know, Vancouver's going to have to do their damage when they're playing against some of the depth of Nashville and some of the players that, you know, haven't played in these situations. And they don't have a ton of firepower, you know, they really don't. So if Vancouver can shut down that top line and shut down Roman Josi, then I like their chances.
The Leafs in Boston, I actually picked the Leafs to win this series. And then I watched that game. I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, as much as I like the Leafs forwards more than I like the Bruins forwards, that defense, which is, I mean, my own fault, like, as I've been harping on the Leafs defense for ages, like, it did not look good against Boston. What was your big takeaway from the Leafs blowout loss to Boston in game one?
I did not take the Leafs in this series. I will say that. And watching that game, it was like, it was kind of like, I think Bourne said after the game, it was kind of like if an AI, you got an AI script to read all of the previous Leafs Bruins and come up with a script for how the game would go. That was basically it. Like, bad penalties, and the Stars don't score, and Boston capitalizes on turnovers, and their goaltending's better. And it was basically like every Leafs Bruins playoff loss that we've seen going back to 2013. That's what that game felt like. And I think Toronto's in trouble. I mean, I know it's only one game, but there's a lot of holes on this roster. And a big reason why, you know, they finished with 9 fewer points than they had last year. And that was with Matthews scoring 69 goals, Nylander hitting 98 points. Both of those guys had way better years than last year, and they still took a step back as an organization and as a team. And, you know, with Nylander out of the lineup, they're just, I don't know, that advantage that they've got forward-wise over Boston's the same way as Nashville almost. Like, you look at their forwards, and, like, Pastrnak is amazing, but then you look at some of their other lines, it's like, holy cow.
Who are these guys?
There's not a lot there. Mm-hmm. Now it's pretty meat and potatoes, but it doesn't matter because Boston's one of those teams. You guys know this well. Everyone there knows this well. Super well coached. Don't make a lot of mistakes. A lot of really smart two-way players. Good defensively, and they've got two goalies who I think you can argue are in the top 10 in the league and how good they are. So it's going to be pretty interesting if they roll out Linus Ullmark and he shuts them down today, because. You know, that's the other thing with the Leafs. I haven't even talked about it, but, like, their goaltending has just not been that great this season, and especially hasn't been that great lately.
James, I feel like I asked this question a lot last year, and I've asked it a lot less this year. What's at stake for the Leafs in these playoffs? Like, when it comes to the decision on the head coach, Sheldon Keefe, decision to keep a guy like Mitch Marner, who they can sign to an extension this summer, I don't know if they're considering any big trades. I know they've got some cap space opening up, but what's at stake for the Leafs in this opening playoff round?
Well, honestly, I think it probably goes even higher than that. You know, Brendan Shanahan's been here. This is his 10-year anniversary right now. He's got 1 year left on his contract. There's a new boss coming in for the ownership group, MLSE, above Brendan Shanahan. I know that ownership here is incredibly frustrated with how bad this team has been in the playoffs year after year. And, you know, there's pressure on absolutely everybody. You know, they didn't have the greatest offseason. You know, they made mistakes. They spent $4.15 million on John Klingberg, and he couldn't play. Luckily, they were able to shut him down and put him on LTIR. But there's lots of holes on this roster. They're an underdog in this series. It's hard watching that first game and frankly watching a lot of their season, coming up with a way that they're going to be able to go deep in the playoffs this year. So I think there's pressure on basically everybody. I mean, if they don't make changes higher up, they could potentially give Shanahan, you know, like one more year. And that's when I think, you know, you would see pretty wholesale changes. And that would be, I can't see a way if they lose in the first round that the coach comes back. And I can't see a way if they lose in the first round that the whole core comes back either. And, you know, they just signed Nylander. They just signed Austin Matthews. They both got no movement clauses. Tavares is not going to be tradable with a no movement clause 1 year left at $11 million. And he had 65 points this year. And he's, what, 33, 34 years old. Mm-hmm. There would really only be one core piece that you could really move off of, probably. And that's Marner, and Marner's got 1 year left on his contract. So, you know, I think that this series, there's a lot riding on it. And if they lose in 5 or 6 games, I think it's probably going to be pretty ugly here.
Why didn't William Nylander play?
Well, he's hurt.
Didn't he play all 82 games though? And then he's hurt. That seems very Leaf-like-ish.
I mean, he's almost never hurt. He has hardly had any injuries his whole career. And then, you know, 2 days before game one, he wakes up and he's not feeling great. You know, the team's really protecting whatever it is, but Chris Johnston, and the story he had yesterday, said he woke up on Thursday, 2 days before game one, and had some stiffness. So I don't know if that's his back or groin or neck or what it is, but, you know, and Chris's report is basically he's not going to miss the whole series, but they're not sure about game two tonight.
We're speaking to James Myrtle from The Athletic here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. I was perusing your timeline, James, and I noticed you were weighing in on the situation in Colorado with their goaltending. How concerned do the or should the Avs be with Alexander Fjorgiev now that it's 7-6 loss to Winnipeg in game one? I know you said it sounds like that might be Justus Annunen's music. Is it that bad?
Well, I mean, Annunen played well for them down the stretch. I mean, it's funny, you know, I was tweeting that stuff and I was getting Colorado fans, you know, and then my next tweet, and I was kind of joking, Annunen didn't back up game one because he was ill and wasn't feeling well. And then I tweeted, oh, maybe watching Georgiev, maybe he's sick too. And then the Avalanche fans all barraged me with replies and they were like, no, he's been like this all year. He's not sick. This is what Georgiev, this is how he plays. So I thought it was a really weird choice for Colorado last year. Remember, they win the cup, they move off of Darcy Kemper. Kemper signs the big contract in Washington and hasn't really been very good. And they decide on Georgiev as their goalie. And I thought that was a weird choice. And I thought the contract they gave him was weird. And, you know, they don't have a experienced backup. You know, Annunen's a young guy who's barely played in North America. And you've basically got a championship potential team otherwise and a huge hole in net. And it seems a curious choice, but I think, you know, you talk to executives around the league and more they just, unless you've got a Hellebuck or a Demko or a UC Soros or someone like that, Swayman, there's still some left, but there's not that many. Unless you've got one of those guys, you talk to executives around the league and they're like, we don't know what to do with the goalies really. Like, you know, and that's why I think the strategy you saw, there were five or six teams this year that they carried three goalies almost the whole year. And part of that is just like, we don't know if any of these guys are any good. We might need all of them and we might need to cycle through all of them. And that's what teams like Detroit ended up doing, was basically playing three goalies the whole season. And I think you're going to see more of that as there's this kind of uncertainty about the position in the league going forward.
We've got four games, as I mentioned tonight, including game two of the Leafs and Bruins series. And of course, game one of Dallas and Vegas, and then the nightcap, Edmonton and Los Angeles. James, thanks a lot for doing this today, bud. We really appreciate it. Enjoy four more games tonight. Try and get up and stretch in between them and, you know, get a little bit of motion. And then we'll do this again as the playoffs roll along.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That's James Myrtle from The Athletic here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
So lots of great texts coming into the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. Just a reminder, if you want to weigh in, I believe we've got an open segment on the other side, so weigh in on anything Canucks-related, or you can send in on what we learned for Hour 3. Jay in North Delta texts this in. I never look to Game 1 of Round 1 in any series to get a read on what we can expect the rest of the way. The energy is all over the place, making everything unpredictable. Jay in North Delta, that is a great text and a very thoughtful text, and I think you're absolutely right. I don't think you can take too much from, frankly, any single game in a series ever. You know, it might be even more in game one, but, you know, I picked the Leafs in that series, and it might have been a terrible pick. We acknowledge it's a coin, you know, we thought it was a coin toss series. If you look at the betting odds before it, it was pretty even, but the Leafs did not look good in that game. But, you know, I'd be pretty shocked if the Bruins just swept them. You know, just the same as I'd be pretty shocked if the Canucks swept the Preds just because, you know, they had a good game last night. These series, they're a long way, and human nature kicks in. Either you get comfortable with a lead or you get desperate because you're trailing. But, you know, it was I thought it went so badly for the Leafs that I did start to wonder, wow, like, you know, maybe they're going to get beaten by the Bruins again.
But with all due respect to Jay in North Delta talking about game one and you don't take anything from it, you should take something from it. The numbers play out that it's 65%. 65% of teams that win game one go on to win the series for a multitude of reasons. One,
you've now cut
the number of games that you have to win from 4-3. That's a big help. The other one is that in this particular instance, I think psychologically for all six teams, defending and maintaining your home ice advantage after game one is a big thing. Road teams going in and winning the first game, it does put a lot of pressure on the home team. That game two doesn't become a must win, but at that point, You frittered away your entire home ice advantage, and you're going back on the road knowing that if you lose that game, you're down 0-3. And then it's curtains for you, right? So you can understand how momentum, although it doesn't, I mean, a lot of people argue that momentum doesn't exist in the playoffs. And I do think to a certain degree it doesn't from game to game. I think each game is its own individual entity. I think momentum exists within a game, for sure. But I've seen too much punch, counterpunch in the playoffs and, you know, mistakes, corrections, where he's got a point here. But I think that there was something important for the Canucks, for example, just for it, not to be the only home team of the six that would have lost last night, for example.
Can I ask you guys a question about what the atmosphere inside Rogers Arena looked like on TV?
So my personal anecdotes here, I did go out around the city at about 5:30. I actually went to that basketball bar. I decided to prep for the NHL playoffs by going to a basketball. I met my buddy that was there.
Yeah.
So I was around. I was in Mount Pleasant. I drove downtown and the vibes plus the weather were immaculate.
Yeah.
Right? You had great, like, sun-kissed streets, the kaleidoscope of colors of years of Canucks jerseys, right? Hey, there's a salmon one. There's a blue one. Anyway.
It really is a kaleidoscope.
So, but it's, I mean, in its own way,
it's like, how many teams are you guys cheering for tonight?
Right. If you're not from here, you don't get it. You're like, what's going on? Everyone has so many colors. But here, you get it. You're like, no. This is all from the same team. So that was great. The car flags, the energy, the vibe, the excitement was great. There were a couple of really great panoramic shots of the plaza and the surrounding area around Rogers Arena that was great. And on TV, it was a pop that everyone that I was watching the game with noticed. And I was with, like, my kid barely watches hockey, and he was transfixed by it. Mm-hmm. He'd never seen, actually, where the anthem singer drops the verse and lets the fans pick it up.
He'd never seen that before.
Yeah, so that was electric. All that stuff was great, and that's why I think it was a good question that you asked of David Amber earlier about, was Vancouver the best atmosphere of all of the ones that have opened already? Because in my humble estimation, it was like 1 Vancouver, 1A Winnipeg. Winnipeg was pretty crazy.
Winnipeg was great. But right? They had like 13 goals to cheer for too, right?
And the visual of the whiteout.
Yeah.
Which
is always
good. Gets you every time. Yeah, yeah. You know what? Can never get too old.
Well, Boston is always good. When that crowd gets going, there's an intimidation factor there. And MSG was good, especially when Rempe scored. That was incredible. Like the roar that came out there. Can I tell you a funny story about last night?
Yes.
So I went to the game, and I haven't covered the game. Like, I've been in the press box, but I haven't gone downstairs and, you know, gone to the press conferences after in a while, because I don't need to. It's not part of my job. And there are other guys that's their job. So I went to the press conference, and it's all mixed up down there now. I totally got lost. I like nearly bowled over Andrew Brunette down and like, I'm sorry, where is the press room?
He's pardon
like,
me.
Get out of my way. Anyway, I eventually found it, and Moj was there. And I love the Moj, and I love Moj just goes right to the front and is very comfortable just having a chat. It's not like asking questions like nervously. He's just having a chat. Anyway, he is just feeling it. He is feeling like Moj is loving it.
Yep.
We walk out together, and this is an hour after the game is over. And you know how some fans stand outside the parking garage to cheer on the players as they come out?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was out there, and Brock Besser drives out, and, you know, a nice car, believe it or not.
He has
a nice car. And, you know, and there's like 100 fans at least out there like, Brock Besser, way to go. And, you know, they wave their towels. So I walk out with Moj, and this one guy looks at Moj and goes, hey, it's Rick Tocchet. And Moj thought like, because he came out like the hey, and Moj thought it was going to be like, it's you know, they're going to know it's the Moj. Yep. And, you know, and he was kind of like going over there, and then it's like, Rick Tocchet. I was like, oh my God, that was the funniest part of the night, I think. But it was like, highlight. You know, to bring it all back to the night, it was, I wanted to be there, and I, you know, I don't need to be there, but I told Cam, I was like, listen, I want to be there for game one because I want to report on what the atmosphere was like, and I want to talk about it on the morning show for those that couldn't be in the building. And it felt like the good old days.
Yep.
You know, you
that
got
was the
there.
Vibe. That was definitely a vibe.
I got there an hour before. The place outside, and the Canucks did a really good job putting on a good party outside. You know, there was bands, there was a beer garden, and the weather was beautiful. And the people were fired up. And then I go into the rink, and the rink, you know, people were there early. They were there for the warm-up. You could tell there was an electricity in the building, obviously. And then throughout the game, even when the Canucks went down a goal twice, the crowd really didn't let up. There was no sagging of the crowd. And when Joshua, you know, when Hughes scored and tied the game, obviously a big cheer. But when Joshua scored to make it 3-2, 12 seconds later, again, it was one of the loudest roars I've ever heard, not just in Rogers Arena, but in any hockey rink. And it is, you know, I know a lot of people sacrificed a lot to go to that game. You know, I'm sure there were people that spent more money than they wanted to be inside that arena. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that they felt afterwards that they got their money's worth, because when playoff hockey has been away from your city for so long and you get it back, and you get it back with a team that's done what the Canucks have done this season, and it's a real typical playoff game. Like, mm-hmm. The intensity was there. There were some massive hits. There was drama right until the very end. You know, I hope that people left that game feeling like, man, that was awesome.
Yeah. Like, I mentioned this with Amber as well. For me, there were a few different stories of last night. But the primary one, all due respect to the game one result, was about the playoffs being back in Vancouver. And I don't think that I'm putting it on for show or overemphasizing or overselling it. That actually was a bigger thing for me than however the game would have gone last night. I know that's a crazy thing to say, because it's imperative to, you know, win and advance and all that stuff. But I heard Sat and Bick and those guys, and like, we've been here at 650 for a little while. We came on board late in the evolution of the radio station, but there are people that are like day oneers that have been here. Like, this station started in 2017. Mm-hmm. This hasn't happened in the existence of this radio station, right?
I was watching the game a bit with Josh Elliott Wolf, who's 25.
Right. He doesn't know what any of this is. 10 years ago, he was 15. You know?
I mean, he would have been able to appreciate it a little bit.
I don't know.
I'm sure he was a
sports
fan back then.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I mean, he's not here. I'm not going to call him. He's probably sleeping. But, I mean, I think the bigger point
He's got a broken arm, too.
That's right.
I can call him if you want.
Now, you know what? Leave him alone.
Give me a lot of pleasure.
Let's wake him up. Come on.
Let's do it. He can do a weather report from his bed.
He broke his arm playing softball.
Yeah.
Sliding into second. Who slides in softball?
Hey, that's how I broke my collarbone.
Sliding into
second?
Not
at softball, at baseball.
Well, yeah, there's a pretty big difference there.
Yeah.
At any rate.
One is to be taken seriously.
Yeah, I mean, your point is that, you know, it's been a long time since the Canucks have been in the playoffs, and people are pumped.
Yeah. It was a revelation for those that hadn't experienced it and gone through it, and it was a very, very important reminder to those that have about not taking it for granted and to be appreciative of an organization that is in that direction. Because there's a lot of other ones, like Buffalo and Detroit, who haven't experienced this for an awfully long time, and they're starving for it. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
So I walk out with Moj, and this one guy looks at Moj and goes, "Hey, it's Rick talking."
Are you Drew Barrymore? What? Get out of here. I'm hungover.
Sorry, Miss Barrymore.
What?
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd.
And Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
On a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. Hour two is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made. Because we've had a couple texts about this, I will address it. Yes, we are erroneously referring to it as the Quinn Hughes goal, and we did it in hour one, and I think we did it again in hour two. It's officially been changed to Puse Suter's goal. The Quinn Hughes goal yesterday, the game-tying goal, Puse Suter is officially the goal scorer.
Hughes flung it at the net, so it's still the Hughes goal.
Yeah.
Not wrong.
But all I want to do is make sure that young Puse Suter gets his love as well, right? So good on him for tipping the puck home, 2-2 goal. That is now official. So it was our error, but we were just trying to make sure we clean that up. Let's check in on some of these other series because the Canucks weren't the only team in action over the weekend. They were the last one. So as we mentioned, all six home teams won their openers, and I guess that means that Dallas and Edmonton have a chance to make it 8-for-8 tonight when they open their series against the Golden Knights and the Kings, respectively. I think we went through the Boston-Toronto stuff already. I didn't have high hopes for Toronto in this series to begin with. You did. You actually liked the Leafs to get out of this series.
Yeah, I thought they'd win.
Yeah. I mean, it's not over by any stretch of the imagination, but...
we both acknowledge it's a coin toss, and you picked the Bruins, everyone picked the Bruins, so I was kind of like, I think the Leafs have a chance, and I do think they'll come back with a better effort in game two. And then, you know, the thing with the playoffs, especially when you're the road team, right, you can have a horrible game one, mm-hmm. but if you find a result in game two, then you're actually, like, ahead in the series, right? So yeah. I don't think you can really have a too hard a take on a series until at least the first two games are over. And some people will say at least the first four games.
Well, at least until they start their better goaltender as well. That might be the better course of action if you're Sheldon Keefe.
I don't think Keefe was asked about a goalie change, if I'm correct. But you know who was asked about a goalie change? Jared Bednar, the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche in the pregame affair for your Vancouver Canucks. Winnipeg 7, Colorado 6 to open up their series. Just a bananas game. So Georgiev finished with 16 saves. The Jets this season against the Avs, because remember, just prior to the end of the regular season, the Jets absolutely hammered the Avs 7-0. The Jets are averaging, if you combine the regular season affairs and then the first postseason game, they're averaging 6 goals per game against the Avs. Their power play is clicking at 50%. Their shooting percentage is 23.5. Like, the numbers are off the charts. Now, we've got some audio here. This is Jared Bednar, who was asked about the play of Georgiev, which I thought was really interesting because he didn't even try and sugarcoat it or hide it. He said, in short, but we'll play the long, his goalie needs to be better.
It was, it probably needed to be better, right? Like, I thought we played well. We created some chances. He made some good saves, but... we're going to need, like, a couple more saves than that probably to win, you know. So, but it is what it is. We'll regroup. It wasn't, like, we made some mistakes in front of them that we'll have to clean up and try to get the job done. It's a team game.
So, non-Canucks division in terms of, like, series of importance and storylines of importance, that just rocketed to the top for me because if they let this season fritter away because their goaltending implodes in the first round. That's 2 years in a row with Nathan MacKinnon playing at an MVP level. Yes, they won a Stanley Cup, but that's two opening round exits in a row. And they have, I don't want to say ignored the goalie position, but they've kind of played with fire where they've just ran through different guys, right? And they won a cup, granted, with Kemper. But in the years since, if you go out 2 years in the first round with MacKinnon playing the way that he's playing, that's wasted. That is wasting some of the best seasons that we've seen from a guy in the last, two decades? He's been that dominant. And, I mean, it won't have shades of the McDavid conversation because he's won that cup, but I think that's going to be really interesting to watch.
Who are the goalies that are going to be out there? Nedeljkovic?
Yep.
With Pittsburgh? He's a pending UFA.
Who they want to keep.
Well, I don't know if they'll be able to, though, because they already committed to... they already committed to Tristan Jarry.
Yeah.
They like him a lot more than Jarry.
Yeah, I know. Else. They don't like Jarry.
I can
right
see
now.
It.
You could tell in the end of year press availability from Kyle Dubas, you could tell that the Jarry thing was an issue for sure.
So Cam Talbot is a pending UFA. He's 36 years old, though, right? I don't.
He'd be going tonight.
Yeah, no, I know. I don't see a team like the Avs going, yeah, Cam Talbot's going to be our guy. No, I didn't see a team like the Kings saying Cam Talbot's going to be our guy. But, you know, there it is. Samsonov for Toronto, he's a pending UFA. So, you know, a lot on the line for him in this playoff series, not just because for his team, but also individually. Anthony Stolarz with the Florida Panthers. Mm-hmm. Will anyone talk themselves into him being a starter?
He was a top five goal saved above expected goalie this year. So
playing in a very good environment, you would say?
I've always been very high on Stolarz. I think he's been long overdue for a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
I just don't know if there's any other guys after, you know, we all know like Casey DeSmith is a pending UFA, but I don't think anyone's going to be like, we've targeted our guy and
hey,
folks, we got him.
You know who's healthy and also a free agent?
Who?
Matt Murray.
Oh, man, that's right.
Return to Pittsburgh.
Okay, some of the other – that's nice. By the way, someone – that's really nice what you threw out there. Someone said that the big power play of the summer would be Kyle Dubas making a move for Mitch Marner. That if Toronto flames out and they decide they want to move off a core piece, like Myrtle just said, that they might – the guy would be Marner. Now, I don't know what kind of deal that Dubas could cook up, but that would be amazing. I'd love to see it.
Dubas likes his guy.
It wouldn't shock me in the slightest, to be honest.
And if you're Treliving, like, you can't just keep
running it back.
Doing the same thing.
No, you got to at this point.
You just
if they get bounced again, you got to.
Well, it's clearly not the right mix. If they get bounced again, then this group just clearly doesn't have whatever.
They're three losses away from getting bounced. I'm just hanging on every one of them. Like, I could not be a bigger Bruins fan. Just tonight.
I wanted to add one more thing.
Yes.
Because a lot of people will say, well, you know, their issue is on the back end. It's you know, why would you trade Marner unless you're going to get help on defense? And some people might even say, well, don't trade Marner. You've already got a lot of cap space coming up because, you know, the contracts to guys like Bertuzzi and Domi are coming off the books and a bunch on the defense too. But like, who's available in free agency for defensemen, too? You know, like, you have to be very sure when you target those guys that they're going to come to you, right? Like, yeah, Brandon Montour's out there. You know, Brady Shea's out there. Brett Pesce for Carolina. Chris Tanev is a guy that the Leafs are expected to go after, and the Canucks are probably expected to pursue as well. So whenever there's these free agents out there on defense, like you got to be really sure that you find, you target the guys and then you land the deals.
So other news and notes from the weekend, we mentioned the New York Rangers. They got the first and they're going to win that series, right? No, we're not going to make too much of an effort to cover this one. I mean, God bless the Capitals for getting there, but I think even the Capitals know that they had a nice run during the regular season. It's about to come to an end.
The Capitals needed to score on that power play the early power play,
yeah,
right, like and make things turn a little bit on Rempe as opposed to the Rangers kill off the penalty and then Rempe scores.
Yeah.
Like that was, I don't know.
Rempe,
I think that game,
score. Like, I don't know what? In a playoff game, his first playoff game, he scored. Like, he barely scored. You look at his numbers even in junior.
That was a great passing play too. Like
so,
a nice.
Like, I love playoffs.
Really,
man. Stories like
really
that.
Nice play, and then the Garden is into it. I wonder if this series gets a little nasty with guys like Tom Wilson out there and Rempe out there.
I mean, the combustibility is there
100%.
I honestly, like, I watched that Capitals team play, and I wonder if they spent everything that they had because they're old and they're not that good to get into this position. So the Rempe goal set off a stretch in which the Rangers scored three times in 2 minutes and 6 seconds. That was more than enough. They win 4-1. They're up 1-0 in their series. The Battle of Florida, first round goes to the Florida Panthers. They win 3-2. Verhaeghe scores. Tkachuk scores. That game lacked a little bit. I thought it was going to be more nasty right off the hop. It was fine. It had good energy in the building, and David Amber referenced it as well. But that one, to me, I found myself trying to talk myself into it because the two teams don't like each other, and this is the third time that they've played one another. But it's going to need to have some serious fireworks to get on my radar like some of these other series.
I don't care about a fan rivalry between the Lightning and the Panthers.
They have a real rivalry
I don't care.
And I thought that they
hate each other.
Yeah. They do, though. They had good playoff series that were full of violence. Mm-hmm. They were angry, nasty series, right? And I thought the addition of Matthew Tkachuk was going to put it over the top. But
have there been many controversial plays in the first six games of the playoffs?
No, it's been very tame.
It's been very peaceful.
Like for last night, again, as we'll circle back to the Canucks, 18 hits the Canucks threw in the first period. Mm-hmm. And it was a concerted effort to be physical. I think some of it might have been Tocchet alluding to chasing it a little bit because the energy in the building was so high. And if you look at it, it's like you finish the first period with 18 hits and like five shots. Like, that's not the right metric.
These young kids are too respectful of each other.
I just think
it was aggressive hockey, but I just didn't think there were many plays that I saw that crossed the line in any of the six games.
Last night's game had some feel for sure.
For sure.
But there was not, there was a difference between physicality and nastiness. I saw that across most of the opening games of these series.
Do you think Reeves will get in for the Leafs again? He's just such a liability out there.
I mean, he's chasing.
He didn't get a penalty, but he chases hits out there. And then I think there was one play where he might have even taken out his defenseman. And then the Bruins go back on an odd man rush, and you're kind of like, what are you?
Well,
what are
Keith,
you here for, you man?
Keith called out Domi.
Domi. So this is all these guys. Like, why would you let Marchand get under your skin like that? It feels like the Leafs have been chasing something for years that is just not in the DNA of your core players.
Yep.
And I think that's why, I'm going to go back to JT Miller last night. His performance was, I've already said it was inspiring, but it's that talent mixed with the physicality and the kind of brutal nature of playoff hockey. He's willing to just take guys on. And that's really what the playoffs is. And really hockey in general is winning puck battles all over the ice. And you can win puck battles with speed. You can win it with skill. You can win it with smarts. But sometimes in the playoffs, you just need to go, I'm going to put my shoulder down. You're going to put your shoulder down. We're going to collide and see what happens.
Yep.
And I think what the Canucks have tried to do is give themselves more players that will win those type of battles. Mm-hmm. And if you think of, obviously they retain JT Miller. And they bring in these defensemen like Nikita Zadorov and Carson Soucy. And I know you're a big Zadorov guy.
Love Big Z.
He was a force last night. And he also kept it smart, because Zadorov does give off that potential suspension vibe sometimes. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're like, okay, Big Z, you got to walk the fine line between playing smart, aggressive hockey and playing reckless hockey, because you don't want to penalize your team. You don't want to put your team shorthanded. And that was a message from Tocchet. He loves the physicality of last night, and he loved that the Canucks were up for the challenge. But he almost immediately pushed back and said, yeah, you obviously want the hits, but you don't want to get running around. And sometimes when the crowd is behind you, you're like, I want to get in on the action. I want to hit guys too. And then it takes like a split second for one guy to turn his back, and then all of a sudden you've buried him into the boards. And you risk getting yourself tossed out of the game then.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all the penalties though, like for real.
I thought I thought the officiating was fine.
I mean, it would have been normal for a regular season game, but it was just like, I felt like, I don't know. I guess it just in the playoffs, I feel like there should be less penalties.
No, I thought the amount of penalties called was fine. It was one of those games where it's like noted referee hater Mike Alford was like, that's fine.
I always feel it starts that way at the start of the playoffs. Like, we're not gonna let it slide like we do all the play. And then by the time it gets to the third round, it's like, okay. You can tackle a guy.
We should. By the way,
honestly, though,
We asked David Amber very briefly, but I think we should probably focus on the opponent. What did we think of the Nashville Predators? Game one, early days, early times, small sample size. I know you alluded to the fact that you didn't see Philip Forsberg out there.
Didn't really notice him that much. I thought Ryan O'Reilly played well.
Ryan O'Reilly is a problem.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
He's super clutch.
He's very clutch.
Yeah, yeah.
This is two playoff series now where I see him, and he's always – this is some good analysis. He's always doing the things. And I know they spot shadowed him in the intermission. You didn't see it because you were at the game. But they talked about how – you know, and Jake Allen, or I think it was Bieksa, one of them said, like, no disrespect to the guy, but he's not fast. He's not a great skater, and he's at an advanced age now. But he's always out there doing things, like lifting a guy's stick when he's not really even around the puck, or just a casual interference or a subtle nudge or something to shift the balance or to make an impact at all times. Like, very cerebral stuff, right? Like, maybe making a little bit of a pick play that isn't going to necessarily lead to a goal, but it'll lead to a play that might lead to a chance, that kind of thing. And you watch him more and more, and you really grow for the appreciation of the guy's game because, you know, I mean, this is his, what, third, fourth stop now, right? He went Buffalo, Colorado, Buffalo, St. Louis, Nashville. So it's the fourth chapter. Yeah. Toronto, too. God, I forgot about that. Just a very cerebral, very, very, very talented player.
Also a -3 on the night. Like, I didn't think he was very good, I'm not going to put it this way. You know, his goal was on the power play, and it was a nice shot, and I think the Canucks over-pursued on that penalty kill. Their penalty kill, for the most part, was very good, but, you know, they over-pursued. Tyler Myers didn't get in the shooting lane enough to block Ryan O'Reilly, and Ryan O'Reilly made a nice shot on the power play. You got to tip your cap sometimes to the other team. It's not all about the mistakes that the Canucks make. You know, it was a nice play. They spread the puck out nicely. But at 5-on-5, I think the Canucks outplayed the Ryan O'Reilly line.
Well,
and if they can keep doing that, then they're going to win this series.
So
I'm fairly confident of that because the Abs really don't have much beyond those guys offensively.
I'm not
up front, at least.
I'm glad you brought this up about, like, taking credit or laying blame for goals, because Andrew Burnett, now, I read the transcript, I didn't hear the audio, so I don't know the, you know, notation of his voice or whatever, but he made it very clear that game and the way that they blew the lead was uncharacteristic for them because he felt that they blew it. It wasn't one of those things where he's like, you know, good on the Canucks for mounting that comeback, or, you know, he said we broke down. We had two breakdowns in 12 seconds. That's uncharacteristic for us. I didn't love our game, and my impression of it was, like, we gave that game away.
Yeah,
and that's
fair. I'm not sure where the breakdown would have been on the Suter goal, on the Hughes tip. I have to look at that. But, yeah,
said his quote was, there was a breakdown and then a breakdown on the goal before that, too. So he was talking about the Joshua goal, and then he was talking. And now,
I mean, that was a breakdown for sure. And yeah. I think I do wonder if the crowd played a role in that. Like, do they start, you know, it's hard to concentrate. Mm-hmm. And you start getting out of the present moment, and maybe you're thinking, okay, what's going to happen here? And then, to the Canucks' credit, they get the puck in deep, and Lindholm goes charging in there.
Yep.
And he goes, all right, I'm going to hit my guy. I'm going to make sure I take him out, get to him. And then Garland with the puck support. And then the breakdown really was Joshua being, I don't want to say he was wide open, like he had to make a play, and he's got a big reach.
He was definitely open.
He was open. I mean, Garland got him the puck fairly easy, and then he has a quick release, and he beats UC Saros, and it's 3-2, and then all of a sudden the rink is going crazy, and the Preds are looking around going like, wait, 13 seconds ago we were winning this game.
Yeah. A bunch of texts coming in saying the best call of the game was Rick Tocchet not challenging for goalie interference when Demko's glove, it was Evangelista in the slot.
Yeah, I agree. Right? People were getting mad at that, but I was like, no, man, that's a good call.
Did you hear Tocchet talking about it afterwards?
Yeah.
He was like, he was communicating with the guys that make that call, and he was
Crawford,
like,
right?
Yeah. Are you effing sure?
Yeah. My impression was,
they're like, ah. I think we're having communication issues. The line is down.
As I continue to read between the lines,
going through a tunnel right now.
As I continue to read between the lines of what coaches were saying, my impression was that Tocchet wanted to challenge it.
Yeah.
And if it was his choice, he would have.
I bet they would have lost it though.
He said, I think he almost said, like, against my better judgment, I always defer to those guys. They do a great job.
The puck was in slightly before he hit the glove.
We all know Tocchet doesn't like to challenge, so that's fine.
Are we going back to this again?
Let it go.
Honestly, though, so in the break,
He's just staying consistent.
They had Jake Allen, and they spotlighted one from him during the bubble. I can't remember if it was the bubble or the no fan season, whatever part of that season. But and they showed him getting jostled almost simultaneously when the puck was going past, which was, I guess, the deciding factor on the Demko non-challenge from last night, is because, yeah, his glove might have been tipped, but the puck might have already been passed. So they're saying, like, I don't think it was any question that stick hit glove, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, he hit him.
I think the question was the puck passed? And
yeah.
If that's the case, then you're running into a real gray area where it's like, well, the interference doesn't even matter because the puck's passed him. So good on the Canucks for not challenging there, because that would have been a nightmare, right? Going down, and that's one of those, like, you know, shoot yourself in the foot penalties at that stage of the game where no one on the ice causes. It's just a failed review.
Hey, Halford, if you could only pick one player for the Canucks to retain, and let's say this player is retained with fair market value. Okay, you're neither more overpaid or underpaid. You're like, that's fair. Uh-huh. Zadorov or Dakota?
Joshua.
Yeah, Joshua.
I say that for two reasons.
With a tear in his eye.
For two reasons. One, I think Joshua was just leveling up, and there is reason to believe that there's another level. Like, he hasn't hit his ceiling
yet. Well, Tockett said he doesn't know how good he can.
When Tockett said that, like, yeah. I don't think he's putting it on for show.
No. Mm-hmm.
The other part of it is, when we talk about ceilings and floors, the tough part with Zadorov is the floor can be real low. Like, we saw the high yesterday. I mean, Bruff's texting during the game. He's like, the dude's a machine out there. And I'm like, yes, this is the high bar. This is the ceiling for Zadorov. You've seen low Zadorov, right? It can get pretty egregious.
We talked about the Leafs needing to revamp their defense. Yeah. Couldn't you see Brad Treliving making a big bid for Nikita Zadorov, who we already knew from Calgary?
He's familiar with the player.
Yeah.
For sure.
Big, tough guy. I think he's going to add some physicality in our back end that was needed.
Zadorov is the guy. We've seen countless guys parlay a nice playoff into a big payday.
Yeah.
Like, that's Zadorov right now. He could be making tons of cash by the time this thing's over.
That's got to be so imposing for the other team, though. Just imagining Nashville, like, both Zadorov and Myers, when they're on their game, just pummeling guys like they were last night.
Yeah.
Like, what do you do? It's just so...
You take the hits and you keep rolling.
we're going to talk to Randeep Janda coming up in just a few minutes, but I did want to mention one more thing. At the beginning of the year, and actually for the last few years, we've talked about the Canucks needing to find value players that kind of come out of nowhere. Now, everyone comes out of somewhere, but they don't necessarily get hyped up the same way others do. We paid a lot of attention to guys like Jake Virtanen, who didn't pan out for the Canucks. Back in 2011, the Canucks had a great story in Alex Burrows, who's playing in the ECHL. And then a few years later, he's on arguably the best line in hockey with the Sedins. And it wasn't just the Sedins. Like, Burrows worked his way up and just, you know, he was a great story. And the Canucks ended up getting him on a bargain contract. And the same, I think, can be true for Yannick Hansen, who is now part of our team. I'm sure he's thrilled with that. And he, you know, he was a ninth-round pick, and he ends up, you know, working hard in the minors and coming up. And he wasn't like on that 2011 team, he wasn't like a core player on that team, but he was a very complimentary. He was a good player on that team. The Canucks haven't been doing enough of that over the last few years. And if you look at Dakota Joshua, this guy's making $825,000. Mm-hmm. And there are people texting in basically saying, like, I think he's one of the most indispensable players on the team. That's going to be what this team is going to have to keep doing, is finding these guys. And it's okay once in a while to pay these guys once they reach the level where they – earn a contract, a significant salary increase. It's okay, but you do have to make tough choices. And meanwhile, you have to keep developing these guys in the AHL.
Sure.
And finding these types of players and working with them, because obviously Dakota Joshua had something. I mean, it starts with his size and his strength, but then you have to mold that into something. And I think it's yet another player that Rick Tockett has worked successfully with, and the Canucks as an organization as a management group, player development group, have worked with successfully to turn into a very important player for the Canucks, who didn't cost them any draft capital. He really just cost them time.
Yep.
You know, like, you got to put the time in, and you got to put the work in, and you got to get these guys in who are hungry. Not the failed picks of someone else, not the failed first-round picks of the guys who clearly aren't willing to put the work in. Get those guys that are hungry and develop them the right way. Be patient with them. There might be some ups and there might be some downs, but look at what Dakota Joshua is for them now.
Randy Janda coming up next. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.